Welcome to the Athlete's Compass Podcast, your North Star for mastering endurance training and holistic health. Join us each week as renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica.ai, Paul Larson, along with athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski, guide you through the maze of often confusing training principles. Make sure your compass is ready. Class is now in session. Hello and welcome to the Athlete's Compass, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. Before we start, we had some great questions on last week's episode. Here's the question. I wanted to know how to set up a low-carb diet for a 15-hour weekly sprint and Olympic triathlete with a goal of maintenance and slight weight loss, 2 to 3 kilograms, without affecting performance. What distribution of macros? How many kilocalories to take? I consume around 1,300 kilocalories per workout. So, Paul, Mariana, what do you think?
Yeah, these are great questions, Paul, and appreciate that not every user has experience with lower carb diets and how to go about them. And I think it was on a previous episode where we were giving some general recommendations, but there's lots of good resources out there. This is my favorite here. This is The Real Meal Revolution from Professor Tim Noakes. And what The Real Meal Revolution has is it has three different food lists. It has a green list, a yellow list, and a red list. And green is what you want to consume at least 80% of the time. Yellow probably for the other time, and red you kind of want to stay away from. So I won't go into that because it's detailed, but you can download it for free on the Real Meal Revolution website. And this kind of excludes some of the other questions that we're talking about in terms of looking at, percent macro distribution and looking at kilocalories. I don't tend to go there. When you do wind up consuming most of the green list, you tend to hit the macro distribution that you generally want. And I think we were kind of alluding to it on the last podcast as well. You don't really want to restrict calories. What winds up happening, because fat is more satiating than carbohydrates, fat and protein is more satiating. In other words, you feel fuller. You wind up kind of consuming these lower energy amounts that tend to help with weight loss, if that's the goal, which it is on this user question. And really, what most of us probably want to do when we're on this is we want to start losing some of our fat loss, like our fat weight. But that is what winds up happening. As you lower your insulin level, that's the primary hormone signal to tell your body to, insulin causes for anabolism, right? Anabolic, and you lower it, and then you wind up being more catabolic, the opposite, and you wind up releasing fat from your body and using it as energy, and you feel better.
This athlete who's asking the question, he's training about 15 hours per week. So that's a considerable amount of training per week.
Yeah.
So I think he's worrying about not getting enough overall energy. When you use more of your macros or a bigger distribution of macros coming from fats and protein, you're still getting a lot of energy, so you don't have to be tracking your calories. It sounds counterintuitive because we've been, told that calorie in, calorie out so many times. But when you follow the Real Meal, the Revolution, the list of green, orange, or yellow, and red, it's just, if you just trust your gut feeling and intuition, you're going to get it. And when you're hungry, you eat. I found like when I went away from eating breads and, pasta, that I wasn't even that hungry. Like when you're looking at your plate, the food just, you know, it looks smaller portion, but it's so satiating, like you said, and like I don't feel hungry like I used to all the time. I think he's worried about if he's not eating lots of carbs that his liver and muscle glycogen levels are low for the races. Do you have any advice there?
Yeah, so again, as you begin to adapt to a lower carb diet, don't forget there's this physiological process called gluconeogenesis. So gluconeogenesis is, if you break down that word, gluco, neo, new glucose, genesis, you make new glucose. Your liver does that. That's its job. So as you begin to lower your reliance on carbohydrate as a primary fuel source, your body compensates and starts doing that anyways. It makes more carbohydrates. That's what you want. You want your body to always turn into a carb producer as you need it. You don't want to have basically a reliance on the the fuels that you eat necessarily to form that carbs. You want your body to deliver whatever macronutrient ratio you need in any kind of given moment. And only if you go for a period of time and take that away will it compensate and actually start to really ramp up the process of gluconeogenesis. So that's kind of what you want. That's the whole exercise. Again, gluconeogenesis is taking available fat and protein and turning those into carbohydrates. Don't forget, it also turns it into ketones as well, which are highly energetic. And that's why you go into ketosis, or it's called the keto diet. These are more powerful, more energetic in terms of their amount of ATP or energy relative per unit. And you get you get better mental clarity. And you can use this as a fuel source, but also your brain uses it as a fuel source as well. And that's kind of what you're after. So, again, there's I wouldn't worry about the distribution. I would go back to the list. Just look at the food at the end of the day. Is this food appropriate? And then, am I hungry? If you're hungry, then eat. To fuel this. But eventually you should almost, if you're consuming around 1300 kilocalories per workout, I don't know how you're doing that, but that's a lot of calories. And, if you're taking that in with glucose, you're really kind of sabotaging your ability to just turn on that gluconeogenesis. You probably want to slowly get used to being able to go without, right? So, in correspondence with Mariana, she's doing some hardcore Ironman training right now, and she's taking, very, very small quantities. And that's probably contrasts what she used to do. She doesn't need to do that anymore because everything that she needs to do is almost inbuilt, because she's laid down the foundations to be able to do that as an Ironman athlete. There's no reason why you can't do that as a sprint or Olympic distance athlete either. It's just, the programs are actually quite similar.
All right. That is it. And let's get back to the regular podcast. Thanks. This week, since both Paul and Mariana practice this kind of nutrition, they are going to coach me as well as talk about one of Mariana's athletes through a transition. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode about nutrition, about low-carb or low-carb, high-fat diets, I would suggest you start there and then come back here. So coach me through what we do here. I typically race long gravel races, 3 to 6 hours at mostly kind of sub-threshold intensities. I'm using Athletica as my training coach, so I have a mix of intensities and durations. I have been trying this low-carb, high-fat, but I really don't know what I'm doing. I have some ideas. I've read Dr. Noakes's book. I've got his book on recipes, and I've been trying things. Honestly, my big worry is, am I going to have enough energy to be able to manage long gravel races. So where should I start and what should I be doing?
I think the first goal is to define yourself that you want to become a fat adapted athlete.
Okay.
Right, Paul?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you want to, I couldn't agree more. Like you actually, you've come, well, at least you're considering it, right? Like you're getting curious about becoming a fat adapted athlete and wondering, well, you know, could this really actually help me? Yeah, you're probably there to start. And I think you were, Paul, right? Again, just to take it back to you, Paul.
Yeah. You know, I'm 60 and I'm a pretty lean guy, but I've noticed that, you know, I've been a high carbohydrate, you know, athlete all of my life because that's how I've thought that I need to fuel my rides. But I'm noticing a little weight gain around the middle and I'm noticing that I need to take naps. You know, when we were doing our list of things, that might indicate that your insulin resistance, I was going, that one, you know, fatigue, little bloatiness, the whole thing. It's like, I think I'm there. So yes, I am definitely curious. This is definitely something that I'd like to learn more about and try.
Okay, perfect. So yeah, so we got you're the perfect little guinea pig now.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and you're wondering, well, where do I start? Right?
Where do I start?
Well, Mariana, maybe over to you. Like, where did you start? What do you think the first thing that you did when you started to wind up about and trying this yourself? Because it's only been recent that you've done this same sort of transition.
Yeah, my first was actually I want to show you this book. I read this book.
Phil Maffetone, yes.
And there are so many things that in this book that resonated with me, and one of them was like a sugar addiction. So I started, and he has on his website Math Method. There is a actual steps that you can follow if you want to see if you're sugar addicted or not. But I think the first step is to stay curious. And take a step back and see, like, what are my biases? Like, what do I believe in? That was like, it was a little bit scary to like, oh, what fat adapted athlete? Like, what are you talking about here? You know, I need to fuel for my long rides. How do I fuel? What if I get hungry? What if I bonk?
Yeah. You know? I mean, and think about it. Like even just, I don't know how many times I've heard this, like, you know, I must have burned off at least, you know, 5 cupcakes for that last workout and stuff. So I'm going to, you know, take those on and stuff. Right. So it's like, like we often think about the fact that we have to, you know, there's this energy balance kind of model in our head to think that if I do X amount of exercise, I've got to meet that with X amount of fuel, typically in the form of sugar and carbohydrate, right? Like that's that's where our brain is sort of first going, you know, whether it's a big pasta meal or, you know, cereal, you know, with banana, you know, with whatever on it. And but yeah, there's a different way you can kind of go at it to change the fuel source. And remember, that's the goal of all of this. We want to remember what we learned last day was that we're trying to leverage all of this energy that's stored on us. And some of us have more stored on us than others. Doesn't matter, we're whatever boat that you're in, you still want that objective, because the more you can access that, all of that stored fuel on you, the better, more efficient, the better you're going to be at your exercise, the better you're going to be during your day. So that's what we're doing here. That's what Paul's curious about, and that's what he's moving forward. So as a starting point, we probably shouldn't be starting the day off with a big bowl of cereal. Or maybe, you know, four pieces of toast and jam, right? Like that's because remember the very first thing that Paul, you know, reminded us about when he signed off was he said like we don't want to fuel that like when we're starting out we don't want to give the body the thing that is making it insulin resistant. So when we start out, how can we change the fuel sources to try to provide fuel sources that aren't going to give us the spike in insulin? So they're lower in they're slow carb or they're you know higher good fat kind of sources, protein sources. And I'll just say this is when I start with any of my athletes, and I've done this for 100 athletes. They come to me and I tell them, all right, you know, you brought Phil Maffetone's book out. That's great. There's lots of them out here. I start with Tim Noakes' book and I say, here you go. Take the Real Meal Revolution. And I want you going through that. I want you going to the green list and I want you eating 80% of your meals from the green list. I'm just telling you what I do. So this is what I would recommend you do, Paul. I would say okay. if you have 80% of your meals from Tim's green list, and these are kinds of slow carb, and they're all the things that we talked about in the last podcast. They come from Mother Earth, whether it's free range meat or free range vegetables. Like it's as simple as that. And then you know you can have the remaining 20% from the yellow list, and you kind of want to stay away from the red list. But generally that 80-20 rule is a really good one because we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to miss out on social times too, right? You rock up at Ironman World Championships. I guarantee you there's going to be a few things there that you probably don't want to have all your life. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of treats or name your race. So, and you don't want to miss that. I don't believe, but the 80-20 rule is generally a really good one. And if you can have the majority of your stuff at your own home environment set up with that green list sort of stuff in there, whole foods, that's a really great starting place. And then remember last podcast we spoke about, we never want to be hungry. We never want to be restrictive. We just want to be restrictive of the bad foods, you know, but if we're ever hungry and we've got food around, we should be fueling the cells that our apostat is saying, I'm hungry. I need those resources. So that is for me, the key starting point when I start with any athlete, it's what are the right ingredients? And I'm never restricting. And I start there. So I'll leave it. And what have I missed, Mariana?
I'll give an example of breakfast.
Please.
Two eggs, sometimes poached, sometimes scrambled, sometimes just fried, and then half avocado, cherry tomatoes, and two pieces of bacon.
Nice.
Bacon.
Bacon. Sometimes if I have a big ride or something, I add a little bit of salsa and sour cream.
Nice.
That's my breakfast.
I like it. Okay. So another hero in the cycling community that was over visiting me, Paul, have you heard of Swain Tuft?
Oh my goodness, yes.
Okay, so Swain was over at my place. We were scouting out some gravel rides and whatnot that were in my neighborhood. And Swain is also not everyone knows, but Swain is like one of the keto cyclists. Very few know. Like this guy's won three stages. He's won, I think, pink jersey. You know, we wore the pink jersey in the Vuelta. So, you know, it's, like he's a big name if you know cycling, right? So Swain started not two eggs, but four eggs. So, and, one day I'd love to share the data of Swain over four seasons where he went from a high carb athlete over to a keto athlete. And then he went over to a periodized athlete. So we kind of went through the same transition that we're trying for everyone here as well. Swain's, you know, he's in his late 40s now, or, you know, yeah, early, you know, mid to late 40s. And but yeah, he's still still a keto athlete. He was over 4 eggs for Swain. This boy can crank out the power. This guy was like notorious. Paul, you will know. He would drive it. Like sometimes he'd be out in the front for 6 hours pulling the entire peloton away. Like this was arguably the most powerful man in the peloton, right? And very few knew, but there was a keto athlete that was doing that. So that goes completely against everything we've been taught to believe.
That says so much, because he was considered, you know, the hard man of, you know, just the guy who would be on the front the whole day, who you wanted on your team to power, you know, bring the break back or to power the break away. So he was able to, can you say more about what that period?
Yeah, he's very open about it. Well, yeah. So again, this is over a period of 5 years. So again, we've got, and this is data from Mark Quad. We present this in HIIT Science, those that take the HIIT Science course. This data is all in there, but, and thank you, Swain and Mark for, you know, presenting this. This was actually presented at the Cycling Science Conference in Cannes, France. I believe it was in, we were there in 2017. So it's old stuff. But yeah, like Swain is a real early adopter when this whole keto craze was coming, was out there. And the first 2 years of power profile data was collected on Swain's typical high carb diet that all of us have been on before and we're all very familiar with. And then the third data point was like a hardcore sub 50 gram keto phase. And what's kind of cool is that the data bumps up basically in the keto phase. So year three, the power profile actually does get a lift. So he actually gets more powerful in the keto phase. This is in year three, but he gets even more powerful in the periodized. So the periodized approach, this is when he's now doing keto kind of 80%, but 20% of his sessions are periodized with carbohydrate top-ups, where he's just having a little bit more carbohydrate in the meals for the high-intensity sessions that's being prescribed by his coaches. And this is when his profile really bumps up. So we really see he's just higher right across the whole board. So this is, but again, and this is to, you know, to Swain's point, it doesn't happen like overnight kind of thing. He's went through this same transition that we're talking right now about for you, Paul. Like it's probably not ideal just to start in the periodized. You probably want to go through this cold keto phase first that Mariana's gone through, that we're encouraging you to go through, Paul, and just make sure you get that insulin level kind of back down. But make no mistake about it. You're going to eventually want to pretend or bring in a few more of these carbohydrates, complex carbohydrate sources back into the diet. And there seems to be this extra kick in performance after you do that as well.
So you're suggesting, and Mariana, I'd like to hear how you did this too, is that, you know, doing a keto diet with very low carbs and then eventually building that into some kind of periodized where I'm using carbs to fuel the high intensity kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. I'll talk how I did it. So first I read the book and then I started experimenting with fasted runs, then fasted rides. Everything was going great.
Well, hold on. Because now you've just introduced a really important new element. You're talking about food timing, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
So you now have got the courage in terms of a starting point, Paul, and you're going to, you might want to do this as well. You've got the courage to say, I'm not going to have X food before I go and exercise. I realize that I don't necessarily have to have the piece of the cupcake or whatever it's going to be to fuel the first 30 minutes of my exercise bout that's prescribed to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was really beautifully said, because I felt like I wasn't ready to go keto, right? Like full on. So I did those small steps. First, I like realized, yeah, my brain is addicted to sugar. And then the fasted, right? So the timing of carbs. And then I had the first revelation for, I think it was four and a half hour ride and then a run after. And I felt just freaking amazing. Like I've never had that energy before. So that was my first aha moment.
How did you do that? How did you get the courage to go and do that? Because like that, someone might be listening, and this is how I felt when I started, like, how the freaking hell am I going to go do 4 hours without taking my, you know, coffee muffin stop on my regular bike route that I always do on the weekends? How did you get the courage to do that?
My coach is a wise man, and he said, "Stay curious."
Nice.
No, it's self-talk. It was scary for sure. Like everything that I've learned is total opposite. Like you need to fuel yourself before you go on a 4.5 hour ride and run after. But I did those small steps. It wasn't like I jumped on a bike a 4.5 hour later. It was first half an hour, then two hours. So slowly got there. But I didn't have those crazy good feelings before I hit that four hour ride. So there was an adaptation period where I didn't always feel convinced that this is working, that I felt that easy rides were unnecessarily hard. I just felt like handbrake is on. So you kind of have to just, you know, stay curious and move forward. Just keep trying. And then what happened in my life, I got really sick, and then there was an international move. I was eating healthy, but I didn't feel like I was at the point where I could go full-on keto. And then once, you know, things settled, I'm like, okay, now I'm committing 100%. And I did that, like, I think it was a month where I tracked everything. And I learned that 20 grams of carbs a day is very low, and it's hard to do because there's carbs in like tomatoes and red onion, and there's, you know, like healthy stuff, there's carbs. So 20 grams is pretty tough to get to. So I did that, and I had some crazy good training experiences while I was in very, very low carb, like Kona weekend. And that was the second time I really surprised myself. Friday, I did half marathon and the swim portion, and my run was horrible. I was pushing the wall. I was bonking after 16K. And the day after, Saturday, as I was watching Ironman women in Kona, I rode 6.5 hours and only ate almonds, and felt amazing. Like I could have kept going. And usually, like normally, I would have had that Coke and, you know, jelly beans and whatnot, and felt horrible. And day after, this is the crazy part. The day after, I had that half marathon to do, and I was pushing pace that I hadn't done in a long time on the half marathon, and I felt just energized and elevated and euphoric almost. So it was like half a year, almost even more, before I really committed it and started, you know, seeing big results.
Yeah, it takes time.
It takes time.
Yeah, it's, yeah, for sure. Everyone, the listener, everyone's on their own journey to this or not, like, but it's, yeah, it's certainly, you do it your own sort of pace. There's interesting aspects with food and family as well, social aspects, right? Because, you know, if you are listening and you're thinking about doing this, well, you've got the rest of your family and the rest of the fridge kind of to consider too, right? So how's that all going to work with meals and those sorts of things? Maybe that's a really good question, Mariana, for you. How does your own nutrition, habits, how are they affected by the rest of the family's cooking and stuff? How do you manage that, if I can ask?
Yeah, I think it has changed a little bit. Before we would eat, you know, pastas and, you know, kids love pasta. We still do pasta, but I just don't, you know, like if you make pasta bolognese, I don't eat the pasta. I just eat the meat sauce with my veggies and stuff. But yeah, definitely we eat less of that processed stuff. And I don't go to the middle aisles. You know, they love their chips. So there's less chips in our family, which is, I think it's overall better. But I do sometimes, I do buy for them because I know they enjoy it. But definitely, yeah, it's better. We always have huge basket of fruits and that's still there. And
nice.
Yeah. So definitely, it has changed a little bit. Definitely everybody eats more vegetables for sure.
Nice. And Paul, I wanted to get back to you because, you know, when Mariana was talking about her euphoria and breakthrough moments there, you were telling us off air just before that you're sort of just starting down this journey, but you have almost kind of moved to this place where you're starting to have some breakthrough moments too. Can you tell us where you started and where you're at?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Yesterday I did a 4.5 hour ride and, had a little bit of carbohydrate beforehand. I don't even remember what it was, but it was, you know, very small amount. And on the ride, I had a nut and berry bar, but that was it. And I kept waiting for the bonk to happen. I brought along carbohydrates just in case, because I don't want to be out in the middle of nowhere bonking hard like you were, you know, eating grass. And in the last episode, I know you weren't eating grass, but you were thinking about it.
Yeah, I was.
And but I kept trying to push that wall and I kept trying to find the wall and it never came. I never hit the bonk. And I even intentionally started riding harder on the way home just to get a bonk, just to start experiencing that. And I never did. And when I got home, usually I'm like, you know, ready to eat everything in the refrigerator. And, I wasn't that hungry. I ate, you know, I had a couple of eggs and some peanut butter and that was it, just to refuel a little bit.
Perfect.
And I have felt fine ever since. Like I'm ready to go out and ready, you know, a ride right now. There's no fatigue and it's a little like, whoa, what is this all about? Because I haven't been doing, you know, I've been trying it. I've been, you know, eating more meals that are eggs and peanut butter and, you know, but I still have toast occasionally. I still have, you know, I love granola. And I mix that in with yogurt and, you know, trying to make it a little bit better, but I'm not at anywhere to the point where I've given up on carbohydrates.
Great. So can I make a comment? So one of the key questions that you had before to us was, how do you know if you're insulin resistant? And Mariana listed off a bunch of different factors. Well, another question you might also ask is, how do I know if I'm fat adapted?
Mm-hmm.
And you've just answered the question for us, Paul. You know when you are beginning to be fat adapted, when you are now doing 4 hour rides and you're not feeling the bonk and you're trying to get it and it's no longer there. You are fat adapted when you get home and you still have that energy and you you know, you are ready to push kind of the next day. So these are all sort of the benefits that that are coming to the forefront when you are fat adapted. So you've had this swing and this shift, and you really haven't had to do too much. You've only removed kind of some carb sources and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you haven't, and this is kind of what I was saying before with the fact that, endurance athletes in general, they're halfway there already. It's so easy for them to do and shift over and to become more fat adapted than someone that's kind of coming off the couch. So
go ahead. It's maybe physiologically easy, but mentally it's not easy.
Sure.
One of the questions I had in the beginning of my journey was, how do I know that I get enough energy for recovery? So I was thinking of, okay, I want to make sure that I get enough energy so that I don't get into the, you know, low energy availability and all the mayhem that can follow that, like stress fractures and all that. But then just feeling that you're not hungry, it can kind of like make you think, okay, well, I'm not feeling hungry. How do I make sure that I eat enough? You know, that was my concern in the beginning of the journey.
And what did you do with that?
I follow my cues. And I do usually eat a little bit extra protein after my, especially my runs, because of that, neuromuscular extra load, muscle, micro tears. So to make sure that I'm building up my muscles again. So I take a little bit, I make a smoothie with berries and avocado. My daughter, 11-year-old daughter, makes the best smoothies with avocado and berries. Awesome. And then I put a little bit of half and half cream in there. And protein. Yeah.
So I use, and I sometimes refer this to my athletes about using MyFitnessPal as a way of just seeing what you eat during a day. And this, it breaks down your calories and it breaks down, how much carb, how much fat, how much protein. Can we look at this process in terms of a macro percentage kind of model, like 30-30-30 or blah, 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 whatever it might be? Or is this entirely kind of individualized?
I think there's lots of different ways to skin the cat, as we say, with this whole thing. So, if you, Mariana was even saying that she went through a whole 1 month project where she was very anal about, she recorded everything. So if that works for you, and maybe that's an important place to kind of start. If that's, if that fits with your, mental process, then great. But there's probably a bunch of other ways to kind of go at it as well, I would think.
Yeah, I didn't really look at macros or calories. I didn't go in and, I know some people, they look at their Garmin data and see how many calories they burn during an exercise, and then they try to match all the calories. They figure out their basal metabolic rate, and then they add their exercise. And I didn't do that because it would drive me crazy to
calculate it all. And I agree. I think that's all.
And I don't trust the Garmin data to really give a true picture of how many calories you burn during an exercise.
Same.
I just don't.
Okay.
Same. If you follow Benjamin, Ben Bickman, he really kind of shoots the whole energy in, energy out hypothesis. There's a lot of guessing that's going in to the whole process of, how much you're actually burning, you as an individual, where your basal metabolic rate fits, how much, how many calories are actually in some of these different food sources. You are there. The degree of error that we are talking about across this whole thing is, is massive. You're really throwing darts mm-hmm. up in, against a wall and having a guess. So to me, it comes back with a lot of feel. It comes back to just some basic rules, which is again why I really think it, you know, becoming familiar with your lists and the things you want to eat and the things you probably don't want to eat. And maybe you have to learn those for the first time. You actually have to read and see what those things, because some of the things might surprise you. Oh, is rice really potentially a problem? Yeah, well, white rice could be. It could really spike your insulin levels, and you might not want that in, you know, in the beginning kind of thing. So, my philosophy is and again, you're talking to a tech guy, but I don't think it's a real great use of your time, honestly, to go down that, unless you need this initial process. I mean, that Mariana went on herself. We're all individuals this way. So,
yeah. When we're eating more protein and more fats, and some people might find that they don't feel hungry after hard sessions, and I guess their LEA, low energy availability, sometimes speaks to the lack of feeling hungry after big sessions, right? Some athletes just are not hungry. If you can identify yourself as such athlete, then I would definitely like make sure that you eat a little bit after your sessions, and then make sure when you're eating the Nature's Bounty, like, you can eat so much good stuff and not worry about the calories. Are you getting, you know, enough, and are you hitting the 30% of protein? Mm-hmm. But I like protein and fat, they make us feel satisfied for longer, right? So you're not feeling that hunger and hangry.
Like all of us get.
Yeah.
Especially my wife. But I actually thought of something. I wish I'd remembered it in the last podcast, but I didn't. I only remembered it now. But we were talking about REDS, reduced energy deficiency syndrome, and we were talking about, you know, what's the whole issue around the, you know, LCHF, low carb versus high carb, and all these sorts of things. And then, you know, we also kind of brought up your knowing about when you are fat adapted. Well, there is a place where, you know that you no longer have REDS, and you know that you're fat adapted, and you know that when your menstrual cycle returns. So I don't know what the percentage is, but it's pretty high. A lot of female endurance athletes, they lack a regular menstrual cycle. And here's in my experience, with the gals that I coach, and they go through this whole process. When they come back into becoming fat adapted, their menstrual cycle returns. And that's because, you know, it kind of comes back to, we talked about this in some of the healthy athlete podcasts, right? It's when the HPA axis, hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, it talks to the gonadal axis, and all the gonadal hormones, they start thinking, yep, yeah, everything's good. We're all healthy and whatnot. It's time to reproduce, and that kicks back in, and we get that nice tell of a healthy female athlete. So I'll just add that as another factor on the list that kind of it crosses both the REDS topic and it crosses the fat adapted athlete signal.
So when I have my 30-30s, or when I have my long threshold intervals that I'm doing to prepare for gravel, should I try without any carbohydrate, or should I take a little bit on just to make sure I have a little bit of energy?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes to both. It's okay. In the beginning, like, I think if it were me, and again, to the whole thing that Mariana was saying, stay curious, I would be curious about doing those without to start. And then I would be curious another time to put those back in. So, you know, and this kind of goes away as we go from being general towards being specific. When we're generally trying to improve our base and our foundation of the ability to do those efforts, I would want to do them probably without the carbohydrate. I would just want to be like, what's my baseline and what is my ability without any of the kerosene over top of the fire? And then once I know that baseline and I can measure those quite nicely in Athletica and using workout reserve power numbers or whatever, now I'm going to do another experiment and I'm going to try some of this periodized stuff because it's been a period of time where, you know, I'm pretty confident. I've got all the signs that I'm fat adapted. I'm going to start playing with some race specific kerosene and maybe I'm fueling up a little bit more carbohydrate complex, you know, slow carb release kind of products before I'm going out to do these efforts on gravel or whatever. And maybe I'm even having a bit of my race product because it's a race simulation kind of during some of those long efforts. So now I'm trying some of my carbohydrate product that I know I'm going to use for the event itself. And I'm trying that out again. And then I'm going back and I'm comparing feel, I'm comparing heart rate and power output during those. And you're always an N of one experiment with all of this sort of stuff. And that's how I'm operating. Thoughts, Mariana? So,
yeah, Mariana, I'm doing the FTP test on Thursday. Should I try it without carbs? I mean, do you do your FTP test without carbs?
No, it's been a while that I did. Well, no, we did FTP.
Yeah, we did about a month ago. Yeah.
No, I don't take anything. Like I eat my breakfast
Yeah.
And then a few hours later,
I mean, that's a great question though, Paul. Like, so think about it, an FTP test, you know, it's 20 minutes all out, right?
Yeah.
Do you need carbs for 20 minutes? Like that's a really important question that the listener should have in their mind. And the answer is no, you don't. You've got, because this kind of goes back to what's on board, right? Like the amount of energy that you've got on board, even just in the form of stored glycogen. Remember, we learned last week that you've got 350 to 400 grams of stored carbohydrate in the form of muscle glycogen and liver glycogen. That's more than enough. Remember, that's 2 hours of activity. So 20 minutes is less than 2 hours. You don't need anything for an FTP test. So Paul, to your answer, you definitely don't need anything.
All right. Well, we'll give it a shot. I'm nervous now, but this is awesome.
Good. This is great. Be nervous. Yeah. Be nervous, but also be curiously confident that it's possible you could be as good, if not better, without.
Yeah, I've coached a couple of skiers that had their American Porcupiner this weekend, and it got cut short from 50K to 30K. And we were doing our pre-race chats, and I always ask them to do a race planning. And I said, well, you know, like they had said, oh, I'll take this on this aid station. I'll take this because we've talked about we need carbs during races. But then I'm looking at, okay, what is your goal pace and what is your expected race time? Maybe hour and 40. I'm like, no, you don't need anything. You don't need to take anything. If you feel like you need a drink, yeah, sure. But you don't have to be fueling. You don't have to be taking gels every 5K for this. Because you have enough energy. You have enough glycogen in your muscles and liver to, you know, help you get through.
You do. The only bit of evidence that I will say there is, and this is a lot of Oskar Zhukendrup's studies where they show that mouth rinse studies, without even ingesting this, there's something with actually rinsing your mouth, swilling carbohydrate and sugar around in your mouth, triggers the central nervous system to boost and push a little bit harder. But it really, really, we're talking minimal stuff. And we, you know, whether that actually is a real effect or not, is it just exclusive to a laboratory? You know, these have not been done in the field like you're describing, but just so that is out there and that we're kind of covering our base, we are aware of those sorts of studies. That could be an option for an athlete coach combo, but yeah, I don't think it's at an hour 40. You're really splitting hairs whether that's going to make a difference or not.
Yeah.
And it could actually hinder too, right? Don't forget, remember, if stuff gets into the gut, it can cause bloating, and it can actually be disruptive as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a process that goes on with that. Whereas, as opposed to just sitting down and focusing on moving forward, which is what you should be focused on if you're racing.
Yeah. And she actually mentioned that sometimes when she's fueling and taking in noon or whatever electrolytes, she gets hiccups, which is really annoying if you're running or skiing, you get hiccups. And she totally did it, and she felt really good. So
awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, it was
great.
One learning there too.
So as I'm trying this way of eating and fueling, I still take some carbohydrate with me on the ride just in case. What should I be bringing? Some kind of fat, like Mariana, you were talking about almonds while you were eating. You know, should I bring something with me along on these rides, or do I just simply not need them because I've got enough fat as fuel?
I use nuts and Lara bars.
Nice. Yeah, and I'm kind of the same, Paul. Like, I really feel like, so I live out here in the sticks and the boonies in Revelstoke, out in the Rocky Mountains, you know, and I really kind of take my training a lot like I'm, you know, I'm going bush, I'm going backcountry, and you know, it's good to have something as by way of energy. And so I'd take it like the same thing that I'm going to go for a hike on, big long hike, you know. Then those are the kinds of things, like slow carbs kind of stuff, right? Trail mix, or, you know, like, yeah, nuts is sort of the main one. So there's that energy on board if needed. Whether I take any or not, we'll see how I feel. I'll probably go, sometimes it's just nice mentally to know that's there if you need it. But yeah, it's fun to also play the game where see how long you can go without it. As long as you're feeling good, right? So
yeah, I mean, that's you know, it's like my ride yesterday. It's like I was feeling good the whole day. How do I make sure that I'm getting enough of the kind of essential nutrients while on this kind of a keto low carb diet? You know, getting all my vitamins. Do I need to take a vitamin supplement? Do I need to do anything differently?
That's a great question, Paul. And Karen Zinn has done, she's led a paper with Tim Noakes and team on an excellent bit of work, basically showing that a well-formulated, you know, low-carb diet is actually superior to even a well-formulated high-carb diet. Just when you look at like the main foods that we were describing that are on, you know, that green list, say, for example. So the answer is no, because you're actually getting a better nutrient profile from micros, macros, phytonutrients, all the various ones. So yeah, your minerals, your vitamins, they're all of a higher profile on the lower carb diet. And this is one of the main reasons why we believe it's probably you get some of these extra kicks to your performance, because they're better micros at building the mitochondria, the powerhouses of the cells, and you know, doing ultimately all the various different repairs and such. So yeah, very, very good question.
Wow. Well, my head is exploding. This is a lot, and I appreciate the time that you two took to help educate me and the listeners. Here, at least what I got out of this is that, number one, this is a whole process of changing the fuel source, trying to leverage energy that's already stored in me as fat, no, doesn't matter who you are, you have that stored. And the more that I can use that fat that's stored in me, the more efficient I will become. A second thing that I learned is that I can eat a well-balanced, healthy, whole food kind of diet. I don't ever want to be hungry, and I'm not trying to restrict my foods. I want to eat and eat well. But what I choose is going to be, is different. I'm not choosing a carbohydrate based kind of food. I'm looking for fats and proteins. And then number three, what I'm looking for is then to experiment as an N of one of me with fasted runs and rides where I don't need carbs for less than a 2-hour workout, where I'm going to try, you know, this Thursday when I do my FTP test, I'm going to try it without taking any carbohydrates and just seeing how it goes. You know, the worst that's going to happen is that I'll start bonking during the test and I'll have a little bit of carbohydrate to keep me going. And that's okay. So I try it and see what happens. But that this requires some time, and it requires some attention to detail, but also being mindful that you can't be, what I'm definitely hearing from you two is that you can't be dogmatic about this. You can't say, this is how I've got to eat. And, you know, having a pizza every once in a while is okay when you share that with your family.
It is. It's essential. Yeah.
It is. Pizza is good food. That is all for this week. Thank you for listening, and join us next week for the Athlete's Compass podcast. You can help us by asking your training questions. I hope that we have a lot of questions after these two nutrition episodes. Ask them in the comments in our social media. Like and share the podcast on your social medias. Give us some more 5-star reviews. We appreciate those. And engage with us on our social media. For Mariana Rakai and Dr. Paul Larson, I am Paul Worlowski, and this has been the Athlete's Compass podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass podcast, your guiding light through the complex world of training for your endurance sport. For a deeper dive into the science, listen to our companion podcast, the Training Science Podcast, and check out the AI adaptive training platform, athletica.ai. Thanks.